From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome back, everybody, to a full episode. We took the week off last week. We hope that y'all had a great holiday, but we're back with a full episode today. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's guests, Kelly Quinn and Chris Burns, who were a delight to sit down with. They're the creators, writers, and stars of the web series Straight Marriage, which is available on Kelly's YouTube page. It's actually Kelly Quinn. If you look for the page, it's under Kelly Quinn, but the show is called Straight Marriage. They've made, I think, around 16 episodes of the show over what is arguably three seasons, though I guess we talk about how do you define when it's a two-minute show, how do you define when a season starts and stops? But very fun to sort of chat with them about their process and their show and what their hopes and dreams are for it going forward. Sophie's here. Hey, Sophie.
Hey, Nate.
I hope you had a good 4th of July.
I did.
Yeah.
Did you?
I did. I did not have a chance to start on our book club, our Maker Book Club book.
I sure did. I went out into the woods and I brought my book.
Oh, yep. Excellent. You're good. No, you're good. If you missed last week's episode, we are reading The Real Truth by Reed Martin. That's our book club, our Maker Book Club that we've started here on the Digital Podcast. And we're going to be coming back and doing an episode that sort of reports back on it, like a book club, on Facebook Live the week of August 14th. So you guys still got time if you'd like to read that book along with us. We sent out a link to where you can find it. And really excited to sort of dig into it, although I will be better. I promise by next week, Sophie, I'll have read some of it. Yeah. It's a long book.
It's very long, hence my starting early.
Wanting to get into it quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that you helped put this episode together. These are friends of yours as well. You're on
Close friends,
Lloyd team with Kelly, right?
With Kelly, yes. She's a dream. She's an angel. Mm-hmm.
Their show is really fun. I dug into I'd seen a couple of episodes and I dug into it prior to talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those circumstances where they really have built a really nice world,
mm-hmm.
right, out of what are essentially slice of life blackout sketches.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
If you haven't seen the show, it's Kelly and Chris, and they are in real life gay actors.
Mm-hmm.
They are playing on screen gay actors who are playing straight people.
Yes.
But the gay actors that they're portraying don't know anything about straight culture.
Yeah. It's like a whole world where these gay actors are like, what are straight people? How do they live? And they're just doing their best. And their best is very entertaining.
So they not only have built a nice world for the characters and the sort of dynamic of their relationship and the comedy, but they've also layered onto this larger sort of meta narrative. And they've also infused, and what we sort of talked about in this episode was the infusing of wanting to have some sort of value set represented on screen, right?
Yeah.
As well as portraying something that is super funny first and foremost.
Yes.
And I think they're achieving that.
Yeah, I think so too.
So it's really fun. And they talk about the emphasis on not just portraying characters on screen, like gay characters on screen who feel like they're more than just stereotypes,
mm-hmm.
But also having their crew represented by having queer crew wherever possible.
Yes.
And although their crew is also defined as like two people.
I know. It's a small crew.
It's a small crew.
You know?
But very fun, and very fun to sort of dig into it with them. We took the time as we chatted to sip a Bronx beer. We had the Bronx Belgian during this episode. Bronx Belgian, of course, it has European malts and a candy sugar provide a backdrop for three distinct strains of yeast. Did you taste all three different types of yeast? I guess you don't drink beer, so.
I don't drink beer, so I admired their cans. Gorgeous.
Beautiful cans.
I can always comment on a nice can, and these ones are really good.
I cannot say that I taste three distinct strains of yeast, but I guess my palate is not that sophisticated.
Yeah.
You know? I bet somebody out there could.
Yeah.
Go to thebronxbrewery.com to get all the information on the Bronx's great selection of craft beers, and thanks to them for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. All right, we're going to jump into it here where we sort of start this conversation from a place of talking about, how do you define how many seasons they have made of this show? The creators of Straight Marriage, Kelly Quinn and Chris Burns. Well, cheers.
Mm. Cheers.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank
it's never
you
too
so
early
much.
For a beer in the afternoon.
Never.
To meal gals.
That's right. Well, really excited to chat with you guys about it. As we're sort of sitting here right now with your show, I noticed that season two was 4 episodes. Are there more in season two that are yet to come? Or where is the show at right at this moment as we're talking?
There's a season 3 also.
Ooh.
That has 4 episodes.
Okay.
We have 3?
Is it season 2?
We've been a little bit loose we, like, with the application of the title
How do you define it? How do you define it?
When we shoot everything in one day or one weekend, that's a season. So however much we get through.
I consider it the newest ones being the 3rd season.
Okay.
Because it's a different DP.
And a different apartment.
Yeah.
Okay.
We moved.
You moved again.
We will be moving again for the 4th season. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so wait. Let me just clarify. So there were, in season one, so if you're saying you're defining it that way, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 episodes? Is that right?
So that's where I divided season 1 and 2.
So that's season one, which you shot in a weekend?
I think so.
Okay. No, we did.
Oh, we did 2 times,
different times.
Okay.
We used the same apartment, but it was like a few
one was
apart.
In November and one was in like February.
Okay. Yeah. So that you shot season, how you're defining season one, you shot over the course of 2 shoot days or 2 shoot weekends.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you moved apartments for season 2, and I'm air quoting now.
For
which is a short 4 episode.
I don't
season.
Think I understand what you're
like.
Calling
we
a
did so
now.
We did 2 seasons. It's ridiculous to refer to these 2-minute-long things as seasons.
As being seasonal.
But we did 2, I think it was like 6 months apart that we did like 6 episodes with Haley and then another 6,
six
with Haley.
With Haley.
And then we did 4 with Derek.
Okay.
And so that's where I'm getting 3 seasons from.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Oh, okay. So you're saying there are 3 seasons now.
Yes.
Okay.
In my mind, we've had 3 seasons.
Yeah. But... Yeah.
And there are plans to shoot a season 4, or has it been shot?
Plans to shoot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, okay. Awesome. So I guess that sort of like answers one question, which is like, yeah, where are your heads at with it? So what are you planning to do differently or the same for season 4 now that we've defined it? It is funny to sort of.
My big goal is to get somebody, to get a guest star who would be advantageous for like exposure.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a bunch of friends who we want to do it. We've always wanted it to feel like a project friends make together. And so if it's like going to be stressful or like expensive, you know, we just don't do it. But I think if we can get other people into the mix this season, we would like to do that. Mm-hmm. Is that fair
to
say?
Yes, for sure. Because when you add more people is when it starts becoming more of a production.
Yeah.
Where it's not just...
It's not just Chris sleeping over the night before and then we wake up and start shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like then the process thus far has been pretty casual.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty small, pretty tight, pretty much just sort of like going into it saying, we're going to get a bunch of content out of this weekend.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the process so far?
And that's when... Because we've had episodes with other people, but those are the ones where we have to like block off like 6 hours or like a long day.
Yes.
Whereas if it's just the two of us, we can do like 2 or 3 episodes a day.
Yeah. Because I remember I had first heard of the show when you guys cast Grace in an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because and at that time, Grace was working as a producer here. And mm-hmm. she was like, I'm also an actor, guys. I'm also an actor.
And we're
like,
Grace.
Yeah.
God like, bless her.
Yeah. But you're still a producer, Grace. You're still a producer.
It would be awesome. I mean, I've joked with her before about if we ever... you know, get to a level where we can give somebody money to do production instead of just me sort of frantically sending emails and trying to block off times. I would love to get somebody who knows what they're doing like Grace does.
Yeah.
And it's been important to us to try to have a queer crew as much as we can.
Yeah, we've really tried our best there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because it feels like there is some intersectionality with this series between values and representation in media and a comedic execution. Where's that where has that balance been for you guys?
I think the comedic part came first, and then later we were like, oh, this is also reflective of mm-hmm. frustrations that we have with the media that we watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that it just started with us like joking with each other, but then when we decided to actually start filming stuff, it was like, let's make a statement.
Yeah. We have a behind-the-scenes episode that we want to shoot more of. Those are logistically more difficult because it requires, like, multiple camera setup. But, yeah, we have a behind-the-scenes episode where we're able to get a little bit more meta about, like, the filming process and about our characters. Like, we play gay actors who are trying to portray straight people in a way that they're hoping is very sincere, but it's actually, like, really one-dimensional and stupid and bad. And all the research they do is kind of skewed and stupid, and they think, like, oh, because they've encountered one straight person, they understand all of the nuances. And so when we try to do that in a like a behind-the-scenes episode where we can talk as our like gay actor characters as opposed to the straight people we play in most of the episodes, I think that's when we're able to address more of the societal stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that shows, too, more like because when we do live shows, we have a big intro at the top where we like explain that we grew up with straight parents and like really get to show more when we're on stage and not in front of a camera. So that I think is the most fun part.
Because I guess it's interesting because in some ways thus far, and this is also very fun because we don't really know each other. And so I'm sort of observing from the outside too.
That's helpful actually. Because yeah.
What's funny is that it sounds like there is simultaneously a casual, fun, like like very much like a friends get together and make something, like let's just sort of like get some content type process.
Mm-hmm.
But there also is layered on top of it some sort of like, yes, this commentary or larger idea that you're trying to communicate that's a more meta concept. That's an interesting challenge to take on to something that has a limited amount of time and resources that you can throw towards it, no?
Yeah, that's, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of we don't know if it's funny to people outside of our immediate friend group. We have been validated a little bit by other UCB people being kind about it and wanting to share it. So then that's proof that like, okay, maybe this is a concept that even if you don't hear us bullshitting about it, you understand that we're trying to accomplish like multiple levels with this. Yeah.
I feel like after we did the first batch, it wasn't until we like watched it back where I was like, oh, we're like kind of making a bit of a statement with it. As I just had, like, it was just fun for us at the beginning. And then when people started responding to it, I was like, I think you see kind of a progression in we're layering it on more thick.
Yeah. And so it was sort of that, it was a progression in that way. So the first season was a little bit more like comedy first, and then you look at the edit and you're like, oh, wait, there's some larger piece of this here?
Yeah, first season was us, only the two of us, I think, acting as the straight married couple, and with no like wider, you know, like behind the scenes or like cut, and then, you know, commenting on the acting that we had just been doing. And then second season is where we started to incorporate those elements, mostly because I was anxious about depending even on like the way we caption it on YouTube, what people would think of the larger concept, which to us was always very clear that we were gay people being straight people, but outside of our audience of friends, we didn't know if that would be understood.
Yeah, I guess I'm always surprised when people like don't automatically think that I'm gay. So I guess I thought that like didn't need to be explained.
Yeah.
I guess Kelly's less obvious.
I
in
present,
that way.
I guess, a little bit straighter.
So I guess from the outside looking into someone who's not around a lot of gay people in general, you could not get the joke.
Yeah. And how did that change inform the creative process? What's the writing process been? How did that change as you took on more of that statement and more of that thought process of what you were building for the later seasons?
I think we started it very loosely, like we would just write it and send it to each other and like pick what we liked and fixed things. But now it's more of like we write it and we can't really improvise as much as we did when we first started because it kind of gets off the rails.
Especially if you involve other people, then you don't want to waste their time by riffing too much.
Yeah.
We have to be a little more disciplined.
Did that additional, that meta concept layer affect the writing process for the later seasons or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think the episode with Grace was like, one, it's like a book club episode where all the lesbians are reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
And I'm at Home Depot. And then we did the one with Becky Chicoine where we're getting a surrogate to, like, raise our child that's a French bulldog. Mm-hmm. And I think those were the first ones where we were, like, writing for the intent of we're gay playing straight.
Yeah. And also, I think the behind-the-scenes one is the clearest example of that. But, yeah, that was where we started to incorporate other people into the joke, I think. But, yeah, I think it has gotten a little more formal in that we were working with Haley Kosan, who shot Business Work, and she's done a lot of comedy stuff. She's super talented. And then for the most recent couple episodes, we worked with a guy named Derek Sexton Harani, who primarily does, I think, like, drama and commercial work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think to impress him, we were like, okay, we got to be legit, because he was very generous with his time. And he was like, okay, I really want to develop a comedy portfolio, so I want to think of us as a team. And he didn't, you know, like, we forced food and, like, transit on him, but, like, he wouldn't take money from us.
Yeah, he was very generous.
Yeah, so for that, we were like, okay, we don't want to waste his time. We came in with scripts that he, you know, marked up so he could follow along, whereas Haley, you know, we were a little more confident, could, like, roll with the punches with us.
Yeah. Because you're more friends with Haley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we, like, knew Haley before, and she is gay, which was our, when we first started talking. And she's also so good at her job.
Yeah. She's so visually talented.
What was the reason to make the change for season two? Just timing issues?
I wanted to direct, and she's mostly interested in projects where she can direct right now.
Okay.
So for me, it was like, oh, I want to try something that I help to write, and if I can start there, then maybe I can direct other people's stuff. And Chris was okay with that. So I told Haley, and there was, like, no hard feelings, but it was like she wanted to do stuff where she was billed as director.
Sure.
And it's understand. I mean, we don't have the money to pay, like, properly pay Haley for her.
Right.
To DP and edit for us, like, she can be making a lot more money doing
somewhere else,
real things that she does. So, like, we had to bite the bullet on that one.
Sure. It sounds like then that there's an aspect of the progression of this that puts you guys in the position to take it more seriously as time goes on. No?
Yeah. I think that's definitely been true. We've been working on expanding into a half-hour format. We're not sure how it works, just because the shorter episodes do. When you start to examine the logic of the world in a longer format, it sort of falls apart.
Yeah.
Like,
you can't, like, have a half hour.
These people don't exist in the real world where they, like, don't know what straight people are. And, like,
yeah, I guess that's an interesting question, because I had read that you guys, in another interview, that you guys were interested in sort of that expansion. Which is natural, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like this feels like your Broad City project, right? Where it's like you're in a world, it's you, your faces, you know what I mean? Like you're building it out, and like hope, like that's the goal, right? Is to slingshot it into what they have, which is like
that's
awesome,
the dream
and huge,
they've
right?
ruined us all with.
They've ruined everybody.
They've ruined everything.
Broad City and High Maintenance have ruined all of us.
It's not going to happen, everyone.
But what is that development process been like for y'all, and where are you at with that because of what you're saying, because the episodes are so short, because it is very much like one joke executed in one beat credits, right? So that is a big development hurdle. How have you navigated that, and what's that conversation been like so far?
We've talked about doing it more as like, if it were a real show, it would be like us as act, like very meta, and
it'd be sort
more
of
like
a comeback
the
format of like The Comeback or any of those comedies about a production of a show, which I don't know if that's a tired thing by
where
now,
we're like gay actors playing
straight characters in a series that we're trying to get off the ground.
So it would be like the series, we would be shooting like the series within the series.
Right. Yeah, because it is like, it definitely is a funny thing where it's so well executed in this format. It fits that format so well. So there does feel like there are, and not that it doesn't have a half an hour life.
Right.
But like those are the kind of challenges that structuring something as a serial half hour and pitching it to somebody who's like, what does episode 50 look like?
Yeah, exactly.
That seems like a big leap.
Yeah, it would be more of a pullback where we focused on like the less one-dimensional aspects of the gay actors who are being the straight people in the series, and like, you know, more focus on the minutia of their lives and their love lives, I think. But, and yeah, I would want to make the director yeah. into a bigger character. There oh. are like ways that we would do it, but I also had him, I don't know, I even remember if I told you, but when I met with that manager recently, he had watched Straight Marriage, I think, in preparation, and spoiler, he did not sign me, but his advice was,
next time.
Oh yeah, that's really great, but you should keep it as it is. Like, it shouldn't be expanded into a longer format because it's very digestible as it is, and I don't know if it would hold up to the scrutiny of a longer format. And I was like, well.
Well, you don't know what the format is, so.
So.
He can't come for that.
He also might have been right. I don't know.
It but, is, yeah. I mean, it definitely would look completely different than what it is now, I think.
And maybe less fun. It might be less fun. Yeah. I don't know.
Has that been something, like, how much have you guys met and talked about that? What are those meetings been like, or has it been something that's just sort of been, you know, talked about casually?
Talked about casually.
Casually. But casually. I mean,
Chris wrote a half hour script that sort of reads more like a short film.
Mm-hmm. It's bizarre, but.
On the same concept. So it's a half hour.
It's on the same concept, but like, it's strange. We have to go through it in general. We like go to a lake house. And it's like a, it is, it's more like a short film, I think, than, there's nothing coming after it, it feels like. It doesn't yeah. feel like a pilot in
they're
the sense that, like, you're leaving questions to be answered.
Yeah. yeah. The impetus for initially even us, like, thinking longer term is we submitted to New York TV Festival in 2015, 2016?
Yeah.
Two cycles ago.
Yes.
Yes. Because they just finished their, like, their applications, like, June.
Just
so.
Close,
yeah.
Yeah,
we were the last one.
Okay.
And did not get in, but in preparing for that, I think sort of started to think longer term. If we were to get in and then have those meetings that everybody talks about where people are like, okay, so what's next for this and for you both? And then we were like, well, we better have some shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an annoying conversation to have, right? Like, what's next?
Yeah.
But also sort of like, what is this thing?
Right.
Yeah.
It's that you've put so much work and money into. Yeah, what? But what's next immediately?
Right.
Yeah. We were given the advice because James and Marshall, who I think have been on this mm-hmm. as well,
yeah,
gave us the advice to, like, have it ready for New York TV Festival because
yeah.
they had gotten in. And they were very nice with their
advice.
Suggestions.
And they've similarly tried to take that concept mm-hmm. and expand it. And I think that it's some of those same challenges because it's a similar structure of,
right.
like, you know, sort of blackout sketch format.
Right, yeah, with something yeah. like The Other Kennedys, their mm-hmm. their short form series. Yeah, you don't know what those guys do
yeah.
in an episode that's longer than 2 minutes.
And I think that they've definitely addressed it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's been a similar thing where it's like a sea change in what the structure is.
Right.
A
yeah.
little bit. And that's an interesting, like, and it's an interesting thing because you have something that is such a strong proof of concept, which is what people want. Go shoot something, show it to me.
Have a point of view.
Yeah. Have all that stuff. But you're also, in describing, like, the comeback, saying, oh, well, but in the half hour, it's also these pieces that aren't
yeah.
on screen. So that's the leap of faith in development that would have to be taken,
yeah.
right?
And I think that's why the next season we want to do more of the behind-the-scenes
okay.
episodes. But
those
again.
Are costlier and more time-consuming.
Yeah.
Mostly, we really have fun shooting it. I think
yeah.
neither of us... It, like, has a lack of ideas for other stuff that we're writing or working on, but it's so fun when we do get to intersect that.
And they're just
it's
fun
like
characters.
Middle
to do.
Priority at all times. We're like, you know, I have a show running at UCB right now, and so I've been like not good about working on stuff, but
yeah.
I don't know.
We both have like everything else going on, but this is like our little. No one can see my
You're
hand
grabbing
gesture.
The air.
He's grabbing
no,
the air.
Or like
connection.
Connection.
Or a little juicy nugget.
A little baby.
A little baby.
Is it like are you guys working on stuff together outside of this project? You mentioned some live shows.
We do it live
you
as
do it
like
live too.
At improv shows.
Okay.
So like we did a DCM thing. We just do like we're sociologists who are reporting our findings of
okay.
the straight society.
The straight yeah, communities. We used to host a monthly show at Annoyance, but then they closed.
R.I.P.
So we haven't been aggressive about pursuing stage time. But yeah, we used to host like a monthly show where we had only LGBT performers, and then we would host in character as the people from our web series.
Which is fun.
Yeah, I love it.
It's, I mean, it's fun to be straight. It's great. You guys are very lucky.
It's fun to be straight. you definitely have worked in like small teams. You mentioned sort of like the leap between seasons, like two, as we were defining it here, two and three,
mm-hmm.
to somebody who's like a little more outside of your friend group,
mm-hmm.
and sort of like making that leap, like making those leaps forwards too. I guess like what about this process or this project? And has informed like the ways that you want to work. You mentioned that it became an opportunity to direct. And what other ways is it growth for y'all in like the kind of direction that you want to be going long term? Even outside of this project. No, I'm not from the South.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was just curious.
But I use that word.
Kelly's from the South. Okay.
What would you say?
I think that I've learned more when I enjoy. Like I don't want to direct. There's no part of me that wanted to do that. Okay. So when Kelly like brought that up, I was like, okay, like it's good, because I in my head it seemed like I would think that if Kelly was like, I want to direct, I'd be like, well, I want to direct. But when she said it, I was like, yeah, I don't have any itch to do that. So I've learned that I really do writing and performing is like what I want to be doing and kind of all I want to be doing.
Are you also
ideally?
We
are producing it.
You're producing too,
but in the long run,
yeah.
I would like to not have to do that.
Sure.
If you like.
Producing is absolutely the first thing I would offload. I'm a very anxious person naturally, so even if I were just an actor and we had a producer, because it's our idea, I would be anxious about, okay, do people know when they're showing up? Are they fed? Whatever.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to be handling all of that stuff, but I would love to offload that to somebody who's better at it and knows what they're doing.
Yeah, and I don't think a time would ever come. Like, I'm sure the Broad City Girls are still stressed constantly about what time people are coming to set. You know, like, that probably just is the person in you, so.
I mean, it also,
but ideally.
It also is, like, if you have the opportunity to do a larger version of a creative project, the actual, like, what time do those people show up goes away. But there still is the logistical, like, you know, nightmare, like waking up in the middle of the night, cold sweats of like, what, how are we going to pull this thing off?
Yeah.
And still having that producerial, like, responsibilities. It's still like, has that been informative for you guys in terms of like the way that this project has forced you, whether you want to do it or not, to do some of those things?
Yeah.
Mm, good question.
I mean, I think it would be, we also both still are like working full time and like doing so much other stuff. So I think that if it was just doing this and just producing, it would be mm-hmm. a different thing. But it's like when I'm working, you know, 50 hours a week and then also trying to make sure that everything, and Kelly's working 50 hours a week and doing another show at UCB and is on Lloyd, like it's a whole thing.
Yeah, I think I'm losing track of what the initial question was, but
well, let me ask this to reframe it. Why not get somebody on the team already to take care of some of that stuff then? Like, why not find somebody who wants that?
I think the only person, we are restricted in that I do really, I mean, Derek is a straight white man.
Mm.
But in theory, I would love to shift to be working with either women or people of color or LGBT people, like people who are not represented in the industry in a blanket sense. So we are, I think, limited in our options. The only gay producer I personally know is Grace, who was working on like big time stuff now, like, she produced, I think she helped produce Jordan Klepper's Comedy Central show.
Yeah, she was the AP on that show, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's a concern of like, oh, I can't pay somebody what it would be worth their time.
Yeah, it boils down for me to money. Like,
and I refuse to do a Kickstarter.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In this political climate, I will not ask people money to do a pet project.
Yeah.
And that's not shade on people who do, but I get anxious thinking about it.
Especially because we're all kind of doing the same thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't have money to give you for that because I'm giving it to myself for that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Even with the sort of, like, larger lens of the political statement that you're trying to make, it feels uncomfortable to do that?
I feel yes, for me.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are giving their money to other causes that are doing a lot
more directly.
Yes, more directly. I think that of course comedy and laughter are so important in healing, but I don't know how healing we are relative to like you know, refugee
healing.
Aid in
like
the Mediterranean. Yeah, like, we just start listing like, sad causes.
Like, yeah, but I guess it's all who you're comparing yourself to.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, in this world, I'm like, thinking of Planned Parenthood and stuff. But like,
that, I mean, it is interesting because you're doing something that is a comedy first execution, and you both are desiring a larger career as comedians, right? Not necessarily as political activists. And yet there still is that's why there is something really interesting about the intersection of like where your values come into this concept and where the sort of like purest like comedic execution are.
Yeah, I think where values come into it and also where fan base comes into it. Because I have been over the years obsessed with many TV shows and web series that have LGBT-centric plots or characters. And those, there's this web series that was made in Canada, I think. I talk about this a lot because I'm obsessed with it. It's called Carmela. It's based on some, like, very old novel about a lesbian vampire. It's this crazy, everybody in it is under the age of 20, I'm sure. They have a huge fan base. They somehow got sponsored by Kotex tampons. And now they have, like, they've made a movie. They had a season two. Their production values are crazy. And that they have a rabid, huge fan base. So there are lots of, and I know through, like, I really got into the Tumblr fandom for the show Orphan Black, which is a BBC America show that has won a couple queer characters on it. And they have also a huge, rabid queer fan base. And we have not been able to hit that at all. And that is a thing that perplexes me a little bit with, like, okay, if you're looking for queer media, you're very limited in your comedy options. And I don't know how to hit that wider, like, because this isn't an overlap of people who love to watch content, like gay content, and are also very, like, there's stereotypes about Tumblr culture, but, like, very sensitive, very PC, very politically active, and, like, conscious of the world around them in a way that's, like, parodyable at times. And that's what I would, like, love to hit. And I wonder if we did a Kickstarter and, like, it got, you know, like we've written After Ellen and Out and some of the other like queer roundups. But I think, yeah.
To try to get noticed in the press.
To try to get noticed in gay press and then, like circulated more widely than we are right now. It's been very heartening the way that we are received in the largely straight comedy community here. We're like, I think our biggest fans have been like freaking Ken Beck and Michael Caine and, you know, these straight white
the
married dudes. And people we weren't friends with before we started making it who have been very kind. Langan Kingsley shared our series with Funny or Die, so now we're like a partner with them or with some like revenue sharing program where they share our stuff on their page. And depending on like views and stuff, we get a little bit of like ad money from that. But I think hitting that wider like queer base could only help us. And I don't know how to get there.
How to get to that. Tumblr queer base.
That's interesting too, because it, in terms of like the way you're thinking about next steps for it, right? It's expanding the audience for the short form, and it's hopefully some sort of development towards like a longer format.
Yeah.
But what are the partners for that longer format that you'd be looking for? Because doesn't it also kind of counter your objectives with the show to have it wind up on, you know, some sort of network that is like a queer content network?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think just because it's what we have seen, I don't know, we always joke HBO. That's like the, we're like, when we're on HBO, then, you know.
Which, I mean.
Sure. Who wouldn't?
Insert
wouldn't
name
that?
Of person who has wronged either of us. Then, well, you know,
like,
when we're
like,
on HBO.
Jeez. Going to regret this when it's on HBO.
No, that's a great question. I think our long-term goals are in opposition to this sort of, like, grassroots desires that we have with the short form to like reach a queerer fan base. I guess we haven't even I don't know.
Like, how are people getting pitch meetings? This is my question in
that
general.
Is a whole other
like,
thing.
Like, let's just say it. Like, who am I emailing at Logo, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's that game where you have to spread the word the best you can until
Is that though where you'd want to pitch it as a half hour?
No, I don't think
not
so.
Not to Logo.
Unless Logo's listening, then
but
yes.
That's the hard part too, right? Is that like you're saying, like, I understand the desire to say HBO because what that means is total freedom.
Total creative freedom.
And a shit ton of money.
So much money.
Netflix is the same thing, right?
Sure.
Netflix pays you up front. It's like all this money opens the door, do whatever you want, come back with the final product.
Which is crazy.
Which is insane. And very rare that that actually happens. Mm-hmm. But like in the position you're in right now, where you're hustling, you love this thing, you want it to be big, you're looking for a bigger fan base, somebody comes along and says, we'll give you some money, but our platform is...
blank, yeah.
Or just isn't necessarily what is, like where your goals are, again, from a value standpoint, mm-hmm. what you're trying to communicate.
Yeah.
Like, how do you say no to it?
I think we say no to like a Vice. I don't know. Like I'm trying to think of networks whose content is like
so
masculine or like offensive to me.
But also in the same sense, like it
just
is.
Just got profiled by Vice
like,
for an LGBTQ thing last week, so I should not shit on Vice. They do some great stuff.
They do great, great documentaries. But like, again, if it's a station or whatever, a channel that does more masculine things that we don't typically like, but they like straight marriage, then like, is it wrong to bring that to them and share that with their fan base? But also, is it gonna do well on something like Vice that...
I think ideally, like, our sensibility is probably like an IFC or a Comedy Central. But yeah, Reach is HBO.
Yeah.
And also, this is also completely hypothetical that it's like hard to even be talking about out loud. I'm going to be so embarrassed.
But I guess I just mean like in terms of like, but even in terms of like a short form platform, because there are these outlets that would be looking for content that would either be some sort of sponsor or some sort of like distribution that would be towards someone else's like fan base or sort of like audience objectives.
Yeah, that's a great question.
And thus far, it sounds like, you know, you're talking about wanting to reach a more like, you know, queer media, queer centric fan base, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that might, but does that run counter to like, I don't know, I guess like if you're talking about representation, where is it like, like if you sold this at FX, that would be a huge change in the representation of what FX does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Which is also seems like it's part of the objectives.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, for sure. Like, I would absolutely love to work with FX only because, like, I like...
Using them as an
Kelly
example.
Kelly, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm using FX as the example here, too. But, like, I know what you're saying in that... When it all comes down to it, like if someone asked us, we'd probably say yes, and I would.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that if it was something like FX, there's gay kids at home watching FX with their parents, as an example, who like that's where we first saw. Or
gay
I
people.
First saw
yeah.
things.
Oh yeah, I have a super soft spot for this like. A garbage show that was on Showtime called The L Word for 6 seasons. Mm-hmm. And it's the first place I ever saw women kiss, I think.
Me
and
too.
I would like watch it in secret in my room in college. And like, you know, when I would still get the Netflix discs in the mail, I would run down to the mailbox to make sure that my parents didn't get them first. And then they would see that I was watching it. Like, I have a very soft spot for shows that pioneered that space.
Yeah. Like Will and Grace, like I would watch when I would get home before my parents would get home from work. And then make sure that it was in the basement so that in case they got home, they wouldn't hear that I was watching Will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there is something to be said for, trying to take gay content and put it in more mainstream places. But maybe, I don't know what the consequences of that are in terms of losing control or losing your, like, initial objective.
Yeah. I guess I'm just, like, it's all hypothetical.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's interesting about that meta layer of this thing, which is, like, again, you strip it back to, like, where it comes from. And it comes from, like, people who are friends sort of fucking around and saying, let's make some stuff together.
Yeah.
And suddenly it gets bigger and bigger. And if you do expand it, you have those kind of questions, right?
And you lose some of the... I'm sure you lose some of the fun. I'm sure that's a consequence, just a natural consequence.
But also the idea of opening the door towards that, like having, you know, having like queer crew right? And people in those positions, like a show, like if you were to go that direction, you'd have a showrunner who, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And directors who would fit those you know, classifications. So that is like representation in a bigger way that yeah. no matter what partner who clearly would be on board for the concept,
right?
That's all baked into what would be the expansion of the idea, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
That yeah. Again, I don't know. I think I don't know enough about industry to know yeah. how much first time, you know, idea pitchers can be
it depends.
In charge yeah. of yeah, yeah, the makeup of a crew of a writing room, okay. whatever it is.
Yeah. But.
I feel like I would be so anxious to like lose the deal that I would feel too nervous to be like, they're not gay, we don't want them.
Like, I think the second that we started to feel like, oh, we're making too many compromises and not having fun, I think I would not be interested yeah. in doing it.
Yeah, it's an interesting balance.
Yeah.
When you're on the sort of, when you're on the other side of that door of like, there's, you know, there's so much opportunity on the other side of that door, but what do I have to do to get through it?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a tough question to answer. Like, what are you willing to do to get through it?
Damn.
A lot.
A lot.
A lot.
Clearly a lot more.
Sorry, girl.
A lot. Almost anything.
Cool. Next to anything.
Next
yeah, that's
to anything.
Fair.
And you also mentioned the sort of like work comedy balance. You're both working full time.
Mm-hmm.
We are.
What where are you at with that? Like, I guess how does that feel? Because it's not an uncommon experience, right?
I texted Chris yesterday and was like, I don't know how much longer I can do this.
Yeah.
Should I just try to find a job that I care more about than I do my current day job, and then just sort of do comedy for fun as a hobby and not be trying to do it all the time? And he responded with a litany of performers who slaved away at day jobs for a long time before they made it big. And
you know, you gotta remind yourself.
You gotta remember your Lady Gagas.
You gotta remember when your
Nicki Minaj is working at the Red Lobster. You know, you gotta remember them.
Madonna at Dunkin' Donuts.
Madonna at Dunkin' Donuts?
She did.
Is that real?
Mm-hmm. That's real.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't see that. I cannot see that.
I
as a teenager. I mean, she made it pretty
oh, okay.
young.
A teenager. Okay, we all worked at a Dunkin' Donuts.
She like, was famous at like 20, so I think that.
It happened quick.
But it's, yeah, because of course there's many days where I'm like, I could, when I'm seeing all of my friends from growing up buying houses and like getting married and having kids, it's not that I want that, but I'm like, you seem so happy in this. I wish I could be happy doing that also.
Yeah, I don't think that's an uncommon feeling, but is the answer that you wouldn't be happy doing that?
I don't think I would, no.
Yeah. I don't think I would either.
I think I would very much regret if I, like, stopped
made that choice.
Now, yeah.
My day job right now, as far as day jobs go, is very flexible. Like,
yeah.
I'm here, you
yeah.
know, on a break from work, and as long as I get my stuff done, nobody cares or asks too many questions. But, yeah, I think some of the reason why I wanted to start even directing our little web series was, oh, if I'm looking towards a day in a year or two when I can't do a full-time day job and then also essentially 40 hours of comedy a week, then I need to start learning marketable skills, and directing is one of those where, like, oh, I could, you know, be working on other people's stuff and helping with either production or directing on other people's projects, and maybe that would be a way for me to exit my current job situation.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like I'm sometimes jealous of the people who didn't, I don't know, this is the bad thing to say because I don't actually feel that way, but like some people who like didn't go to college and who just jumped in quick.
Yeah.
Because there's so much of this business that's about investing in yourself
yeah.
while you are, you know, doing stuff with the rest of your time that's just to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those people who did that and knew that they wanted it.
Totally.
One, didn't have the debt, and two,
yeah.
Had an advantage of being there faster.
Youth and energy, I think, are so, like,
yeah.
I didn't move to New York until I was, I don't know, 24 or 25. And, yeah, I think all the time about the years that I spent in D.C. between undergrad and
I think, yeah,
now.
I moved here, like, 3 months after graduating college, but I wish that, like, in senior year of high school, like, I knew I always wanted to do this, but it wasn't until after graduating college that I was like, I'm just gonna do this
mm-hmm.
instead of, like,
yeah.
pretending in college for 4 years that I wanted to do something else. And I feel like if I had just done in high school, I would maybe be further ahead now
yeah.
and also not in debt.
and there's also a matter of like standards too. It's like I'll go back to another story with Grace. I remember when Grace was trying to decide, cause for a while, I'm gonna like say this here.
Yeah.
For a while, she was on like she was in a living room,
right?
Which she no longer is, but for a long time, she was in a living room. Living in that way, and she was like, should I move to a place that would be a little more expensive and have a door? And I was like, do it when you're ready, because once you have a door, you don't want to live
back
in the living room.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing about like if you know that you can't do the sort of like, I'm going to do art as a hobby, or fuck art, I'm going to live a life that doesn't have that as part of it. Mm-hmm. Right, that to come and throw yourself at it while you still say to yourself, I can live on a couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my standards are low. I can have six roommates. And like, I youth is also good for that,
mm-hmm.
where you're like, I just want to be here.
Yeah.
That's the important thing.
And you're not like embarrassed that you're there.
Yeah. It's not like you're like, I'm 30 and I live on a couch.
And I live on a couch.
Yeah. That becomes a harder choice to justify. And if you still can't live the other way, then fuck it. That's what you have to do. But like, and there isn't any shame in it. But it's a harder choice to justify when you do see your peers and everybody from high school being like, yeah, I own a split level ranch with a pool in the backyard,
And like going on vacation and stuff.
Yeah,
there's a part in Sister Act 2, which Kelly's gonna roll her eyes because I've always got
the Sister Act franchise, but never Sister Act 2. I don't understand.
Well. Anyway, Lauryn Hill's big break. And she quits the choir because her mom tells her that singing doesn't pay the bills. But then Whoopi says that if you wake up every morning thinking about singing and you're not singing, then what are you doing? And you know what? They win the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Tale's oldest
and
time.
I watch that 3 times a week.
Life lessons.
Like, we laugh, but I've learned most of my life lessons from Sister Act 1 and 2.
Well, we'll leave it there. thanks so much for doing this, y'all.
Thank you for having us. It was a real treat.
Yeah.
And that will do it for episode number 52 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Kelly and Chris for sitting down, taking the time to chat. You can find more information about their series on YouTube, where all the episodes are located. We'll tweet out a link and hope that you will check it out. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UCB Digital and at UCB Digital Podcast on Facebook, where we are posting all the damn time. Track along with this show, if you'd be so kind, where we've got lots of fun things going on. Our career tracker is just about to come back. We're going to check in with week 14 with those folks 2 weeks from when this episode is launching, as well as our book club, which we started last week, and we're excited to dig into The Real Truth by Reed Martin. That's our book club assignment. And again, you got till August 14th to read it if you'd like to go along with us on that journey. You can always like, subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy, where we would love to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, concerns, episode ideas, get at us. And you can also send us an email always, podcasts, plural, at ucbcomedy.com. You can find new videos from UCB all the time. We're putting out a weekly Facebook Live. In fact, we got some really fun ones coming out the next couple of weeks here, including next week. Sophie's going to be featured on what is called Bitchtree Science Theater, I think 3000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3000.
So check out Sophie on that, Facebook/UCB Comedy. We got a new short film from Brinkman coming out at the end of the month on Vimeo/UCB Comedy, and new sketches all the dang time on YouTube/UCB Comedy. We're going to be back next week with another conversation with a cool comedy filmmaker, and until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.